and I saw as I walked by the witness sheets, we have a number of people signed up to testify. So we are going to do our best to make quick work of a complicated subject. I'm glad and want to welcome you all here to HIPAA Day in the state capitol, and I'm sure it will be as entertaining for all of us on the committee as it has been for all of you as you've worked on this over the last year or more. We are going to start with a public hearing on House Bill 2305, and I'll open that public hearing, and I'll ask counsel to give us a brief opening, and then we'll move to witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, all of the bills you're hearing today were pre-session filed at the request of the Joint Interim Committee on Judiciary for Advisory Committee on Privacy of Medical Records and Information. All of the bills bring Oregon law into compliance with the federal requirements under HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. HIPAA was a federal law passed in 1996 designed to make the healthcare system more efficient. And specifically, House Bill 2305 explains when healthcare providers can use and disclose certain health information without breaching confidentiality and provides a model authorization form for this process. It also asserts the rights of individuals to access health information and protects healthcare providers and state health plans from a private right of action.
Is that it? All right. I want to welcome our counsel today. Ms. Romaine is a law student at the University of Oregon and is working one day a week in the judiciary office and was assigned the HIPAA bills by no accident, I'm sure, by the full-time committee counsel.
No doubt.
And we're glad to have her good work on these issues. There wasn't an order as I'm looking at the witness sign-ups. Are we leading off with Senator, former Senator Bryant? Do you want to come forward? Senator Bryant, I understand you chaired the work group on this issue. We want to welcome you back to this committee. It's always a rare treat when you're at the witness table and I've got the gavel.
Well, thank you. I'm Neil Bryant, recovering politician, and I was on a 12-step program to overcome political yearnings, and I was doing all right, but I've had some regression because I was appointed to the HIPAA committee by the President of the Senate, and then the 17 members selected me as their chair, thinking that I could sway the legislature in passing some legislation that needs to be implemented by April 15th, 2003. So all the bills you have before you today have an emergency clause, and that's because that is the deadline for implementation imposed by the federal regulations. The testimony I have before you today also attaches the roster of the people who served on this committee, and I want to thank them for their efforts. HIPAA is, the bill itself is fairly short and easy to understand and well-intended. The regulations are 300 pages, and they were passed in December 2000 and primarily deal with privacy issues. My own opinion is that as these are implemented, and by the way, all 50 states are scrambling to do this, that it's going to be very expensive, and ultimately the consumer will pay for it, but it's a lot of paperwork, and there, of course, are criminal and civil penalties if you don't follow HIPAA. Our task was at first to figure out how to get our arms around this, and we've appointed four subcommittees that included insurance and TPAs, providers, special records, and legal procedures. And the first thing we did was an analysis, a preemption analysis. As you are aware, if the federal law preempts, then you're obligated to comply with it. And that took considerable time, and I think we at one point felt there were about 230 laws on the books in Oregon that could be impacted by HIPAA. I'm happy to report that there weren't many that were preempted. But one of our purposes was to try to be consistent so that providers, patients, insurance companies in Oregon can understand that they're complying with both HIPAA and Oregon's law. And so the net effect is you have five bills in front of you today. The information that's frequently discussed is called PHI, which is Personally Identifiable Health Insurance. And it affects doctors, insurers, hospitals, law enforcement, schools, state agencies, and other public and private health providers. I threw in schools because I represent two school districts in my private practice. And initially, we thought we were exempt under HIPAA. There's a specific exemption for a federal law called FERPA. But now we're learning that FERPA only deals with educational records. So if it's not considered an educational record, then school districts are now affected by HIPAA. And my school districts were surprised to learn that. I know Representative Shetterly has a school district. They may also be surprised to learn that. Today, with the five bills, you'll have presentations on each by people that are much more knowledgeable than myself. We met approximately 30 times, mostly in subcommittees, but I think nine times as an entire group. Our review of the legislation before you today actually was done in late January, so we do have some amendments already, and I know with the discussion today there'll probably be some other suggested changes. But I'm happy to report among the group anyway, we reached consensus. And we didn't start with consensus, but we finally, I think, have arrived at that as a group. House Bill 2305 deals with an individual has the right to have their PHI safeguarded from unlawful use or disclosure and has the right to access and review their PHI. Gwen Dayton from the Association of Hospitals and Ron Markham from OHSU will discuss 2305. Mr. Chair, if I could continue and talk about all five of the bills for a moment, even though we just have a public hearing on 2305, I think it'll speed the process.
Would it aid your effort to open a public hearing on all of the bills simultaneously?
Would.
Do you
if
think
you
that's
could.
A better way to approach it?
Yes.
Okay. Then the chair would also open a public hearing on House Bill 2306, House Bill 2307, House Bill 2308, and House Bill 2309.
Thank you. House Bill 2306 establishes standards for health insurers that are subject to information privacy provisions of HIPAA and the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act. This is another federal act. Lynn Hagen from Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield, it said Providence on my written testimony, that's an error. I finished my written testimony this morning, so I apologize for that. And Lynn is happy to know that he's still employed by Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield. House Bill 2307 revises requirements for disclosure of or access of certain health information created and received by the Department of Corrections, Department of Human Resources, community mental health, and developmentally disabled programs and services to conform with federal law relating to privacy and health information. Linda Grimms from the AG's office was going to be our witness on this. She is unavailable today. So Gwen Dayton has offered to fill in and offer some comments, and I know that the Department of Corrections is also here and I believe supports the bill. House Bill 2308 conforms certain state laws to federal law regarding privacy of PHI relating to adult abuse reporting requirements. Paul Frisch from the Oregon Medical Association will talk about this. And the testimony will be we don't need the law, which is different and refreshing. But, again, we continue our analysis of this legislation as we present it to you. House Bill 2309 relates to provisions of information by health care providers in certain enforcement and court proceedings. And Gwen Dayton will also speak about that. This is a very complicated subject, and we did as best we could a thorough examination. We went to other states and asked what they're doing. Their response was, "Well, we're working on it. Could you send us copies of what you're doing?" And so I think once again Oregon is taking the lead. One suggestion too, as far as this committee is concerned. I'm not sure it has a termination point in the original Senate Bill 104, but my suggestion might be, unless the Interim Judiciary Committee or some committee wants to follow the implementation of HIPAA, is that you continue the committee just to review how the implementation is working and what other states have done. So that would be my final recommendation. You will have to find another appointee from the Senate side.
Well, I was gonna ask Senator Bryant, to the extent that you're suggesting the continuation of the committee, I assume that your continued interest and involvement would manifest itself throughout that next process. Am I right about that?
I don't think so. I hate to say that to the chair as he's considering my five bills, but I'm happy to report this is a very qualified committee, and we'll certainly do a wonderful job without my involvement.
All right. Are there questions for Senator Bryant before we let him retire to the back bench? Representative Crummell.
A couple of questions, if I may, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Senator Bryant, you mentioned the education information versus health information, and schools many times have both types. And, of course, one of those things falls under the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, where the school district may very well have information because the student's disability is a medical condition. And in order to provide, as part of their IEP, Individualized Education Plan, some sort of way of mitigating for whatever health issue they may have. So I guess my question is, IDEA records health records, or are they education records? Because as education records, you mentioned they would be probably exempt from HIPAA, but as health records, they wouldn't be. What kind of a position does that put our districts in? And
can you a terrible position. I think if certainly the education plan and the health information that goes into that plan and determines the placement of the student would probably classify as an education record. But when the district then hires outside consultants and contracts with others, which are called business entities that you have to comply with HIPAA, those records may not. Outside counseling, for instance, or treatment. That would seem to be more of a health record than it would be an educational record. School nurse programs. And if you have a school clinic, now that probably isn't an education record, but it's a health record.
Right.
And so then I think HIPAA would comply. So school districts are going to have to do what I recommend, is they do a HIPAA audit to determine what they currently have in the way of medical records and determine if they're educational or not. And then if they say, okay, this is health, then you've got to comply with HIPAA. And you have to comply with all the disclosure requirements and authorizations, too.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
With regards, then, to because in many of our districts, particularly our small rural districts, the ESDs provide for part of that. So, and in order to provide for that, there has to be a sharing of information. So there, again, that's going to create sort of another level of confusion and problem, do you think?
Or? Oh, I think so. And then you need an authorization to share the information if you're covered by HIPAA. And generally, of course, minors can't grant that authorization. So it'd have to be their guardian or parent. And sometimes you don't. The patient, the student, might say, I don't want my parents to know about this. So you might not be able to share that information.
All right. Okay. And then one more, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes.
And that has to do with, I've been hearing some rumblings, I guess, that Congress will consider or is considering or has considered some kind of an implementation delay, recognizing that many states and a lot of the providers, hospitals, medical clinics, and so on, are going to have a hard time meeting this April 14 deadline. Is that... have you heard anything like that, or is that pretty much... And I apologize for putting you on the spot, but I'm just curious as to what sorts of things are going on out there in the real world with regards to Congress and
On January 30th, we requested information on whether or not this implementation date would be delayed, and we were told it would not. But you're right, every state and most people involved with HIPAA are asking for more time. But to date, that extension has not been granted. And Mr. Chair and Representative Crum, you remind me, and I think I've said this, but I want to emphasize it. The bills we enacted are recommending that you enact today, we're also recommending, and it's not our purpose, to create any new cause of action. There are already penalties, civil penalties involved, and possible criminal penalties if you don't take the safeguards and release information. So our purpose and our intent in recommending these is not to create any private cause of action. And I have one other thing I thought you'd be interested in, pass around. This is an example of a HIPAA analysis by the state of Virginia. And we thought of, as a fundraiser, we could turn these into placemats, laminate them, and then offer them to sale for anyone who deals with HIPAA. But with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'll pass this around.
Yeah, please. And we're going to have a legislative car wash out behind the building. So if you can have it ready by then, would appreciate it. Okay, with that, Senator Bryant, do you have this in order of panels? We want to.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's start with the House bill and try to stay focused now at this point on House Bill 2305, if we could.
Mr. Chair, then I'd invite Gwen Dayton and Dr. Markham.
Great. You'd come forward. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gwen Dayton. I'm General Counsel for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, but I'm before you today as a member of the Advisory Committee on Privacy of Medical Records and Information, known among most of us as the Senate Bill 104 Committee. I also served on the Health Law section of the Bars Committee that performed the task of going through Oregon law and looking for preemption questions and issues to present to the Senate Bill 104 Committee. And I'll let Dr. Markham introduce himself, and then we'll proceed.
I'm Ronald G. Markham, and currently I'm Chief Privacy Officer for Oregon Health and Science University and also Chief Medical Information Officer. I'm here as a member of the SB 104 Subcommittee to present information to you.
As part of the preemption analysis that was done by the health law section over the course of last summer, early fall, we took a look at ORS 192525, which is really the core confidentiality statute in Oregon. And it's the analysis of that statute that led to House Bill 2305. Before I get into that, let me speak briefly about what HIPAA preemption means. Your written testimony has a very general summary. Whenever you're talking about HIPAA, Senator Bryant said, this is HIPAA. So when you see a short testimony, you understand it's a summary. But essentially, when we looked for HIPAA preemption, we looked for Oregon laws that implicated the release of protected health information in a way that was either contrary, that is contrary to HIPAA, meaning that providers and other entities covered by HIPAA would not be able to comply with both state law and federal law, or state law posed a substantial barrier or obstacle to effective implementation of HIPAA. Now, the exception to that is if state law is actually more protective of patient privacy or gives patients more access to their medical record or more opportunity to take advantage of the patient rights expressed in HIPAA. That's the guts of it. HIPAA provides some exceptions to preemption. Even if something is contrary, it is not necessarily preempted if, and I won't go through all these exceptions, so they're listed in your testimony. The most important one really is laws that provide for the reporting of disease or injury, child abuse, the conduct of public health surveillance, investigation, or intervention. The Department of Human Services, as well as the many boards that license our healthcare professionals and other agencies, collect a great deal of information in the course of their work. And much of those statutes allowing for the release of that information were not preempted because they were saved by that exception. So some of this, it's a little beyond ORS 192525, but I wanted to give you a sense of what we were looking at as we analyzed all of Oregon law in light of HIPAA. On the second page of your testimony, it has a very brief discussion of how that preemption analysis played out in 192525. The guts of 192525 is really sub 1, which is a policy statement about confidentiality of medical records in Oregon. And that section is not completely preempted, but rather it uses terms that are inconsistent with HIPAA, that are confusing after implementation of HIPAA, that simply just don't make a lot of sense. And there are certain provisions that are flat out are contrary to HIPAA. And as you go through the rest of 192.5, you have similar problems. Confusing use of terminology, the model authorization form that is contained in the existing statute simply does not comply with HIPAA. HIPAA provides for authorization for release of some protected health information, and it has very express requirements for what must be in this authorization form. The form that is in our statute does not comply. Other subsections of the statute are preempted because they refer to this inappropriate authorization form. Others have problems simply because of the continuing confusing use of terms that just don't make a lot of sense. So those of us who looked at this statute felt that there was enough of it that could not be saved, that a more effective way of dealing with it would be to simply repeal it and rewrite it. We want to maintain the effect of 192.525. We don't want to leave a vacuum in Oregon law, but we want to replace it with something that does what 192.525 did, but also implements HIPAA at the same time. I'm going to finish up talking briefly about some case law, but we considered many options in replacing 192.525. Some states have actually rewritten HIPAA into state law, hook, line, and sinker. Considered that, decided against it, because we were concerned that if we didn't get every comma correct, every word correct, that there would be an implied difference and we'd be setting ourselves up for endless litigation about what we were trying to do in Oregon versus what the feds were doing. We also considered giving HIPAA implementation to the various agencies that regulate those of us who must comply, and also elected not to go that route because there are a number of different agencies that would have been implicated. We had the potential of having conflicting regulations trying to implement HIPAA, and it would be just far too complex and confusing. And so our conclusion was the version of 192.525 that you have today, and Dr. Markham will walk you through that bill. Before I pass the mic to him, though, I'll talk briefly about Humphreys versus First Interstate Bank. That's the case that is of primary concern to the physician community. Many physicians believe that case establishes a duty of confidentiality, and a breach of that duty leads to a private cause of action against the physician. And the duty is based, or at least implies, that you will obtain patient consent for disclosure of records. And HIPAA, at one point, did have a consent requirement in it. As of the latest iteration of the rules, though, it does not. Providers and health plans may release protected health information for purposes of treatment, payment, and healthcare operations without express consent or other permission from the patient. And many are concerned that existing case law in Oregon will set providers up, or even if they are complying with HIPAA, they will nonetheless have violated their duty of confidentiality in Oregon and be subject to suit. And so many of us work together to develop what is subsection 6 of the bill that is designed to address that problem and basically take away the Humphreys factor. I'll let Dr. Markham speak, but before I do, can I answer any questions?
Why don't we go ahead and have Dr. Markham speak, and then we'll circle back.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I've provided you a prepared testimony, and we'll kind of go through that briefly. Also, I provided a cover letter describing some of the amendments. We've identified some grammatical questions in some of the bills, and we will discuss these questions with legal counsel and provide some amendment language for you. I just wanted to give you a brief summary of what the areas were that we were looking at in House Bill 2305. 2305 does several of the things that we felt important as a subcommittee, not the least of which was to create some standardized language so that individuals that were trying to interpret both state and federal law would at least have some common language as a foundation. We think that 2305 does that. It begins that process. Another important point is that we do not feel that this changes any use or disclosure of health information for Oregon citizens and actually continues the special protection afforded for genetic information, HIV information, mental health, and drug and alcohol. So we haven't really touched any of those special protections with the language in 2305. One of the important features is the authorization that Ms. Dayton referred to, and that I'll go into in just a few moments. And then we think that 2305 does address the Humphreys versus First Interstate issue. At the bottom of the first page of the testimony, just to give you an idea of the organization of the bill, Section 1 establishes the individual rights that really are consistent with what HIPAA is about. Section 2 goes through a series of definitions to try and establish the common language, and these are fairly standard definitions where we need to address and expand a couple of those. And those are mentioned in my cover letter. Section 3 describes how health plans and health care providers can use and disclose information as permitted with authorization, also as permitted for treatment, payment, and health care operations, and then as required by state or federal law. There are a number of circumstances where HIPAA permits disclosure of information without patient authorization. We have some other caveats with that, but this section allows us to follow those descriptions in the privacy rule and stay in compliance. Section 4 establishes the cost-based fee that can be charged, and I pointed out that this does not supersede the Oregon Board of Medical Examiners rule that prevents physicians from withholding medical records because of a patient's inability to pay. So this just says that you can establish a fee. OAR still holds for physicians specifically. Section 5, I think, is an important section, and I would draw your attention to that. And this is the construct of the authorization form. And it is unusual because it combines all of the authorizations that currently are required by state law for release of each of those special cases, HIV, mental health, drug and alcohol, genetics, thank you. I go through this list so often it leaves me sometimes. But if you look at the authorization form, the language that's now compliant in this suggested authorization form in the bill will allow patients to address each of those special releases without having to fill out a separate form. Currently, if we have a patient that has health information in each of those areas, they would have to individually sign out a separate form for the release of each one of those. The combination into this single authorization form still protects their right to control the release of that information, but streamlines the process so that we can try to take advantage from a procedural point of view that savings. Section 6, as was pointed out by Ms. Dayton, that the Humphreys versus First Interstate decision, which will allow us to use the consent to use and disclose protected health information for treatment and health care operations, treatment, payment, and health care operations, now is optional. And HIPAA does allow that to be optional. Unless we do something with the Humphreys versus First Interstate, it will remain really required here by the prudent practitioner. And I think that we need to address that so we can take full advantage of the options within the HIPAA law or the privacy rule. Section 7 just simply addresses the private right of action. The privacy rule does not allow private right of action, and this just includes Oregon in that same language. Section 8 is important because it repeals the 192.525 and 192.530, both which we felt portions were preempted and would be a difficult problem if we didn't do something to address that issue. Sections 9 through 15 of the bill simply correct the reference language so that it goes back to the language in 2305, eliminating the reference to 192.525 and 192.530. And then the last, which you've already heard from Senator Bryant, and that is that we are on a tight time frame. And just to reiterate what was said earlier, I attended an OCR national conference in San Diego last week, and Richard Campanelli, who is the head of OCR, absolutely said that there is no extension of the HIPAA April 14, 2003 deadline. And so that makes this even a more important section, Section 16, which makes this an emergency issue and needs to be take effect immediately upon passage. And I'm ready to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. Are there questions for either Ms. Dayton or Dr. Martin? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Markham, with regards to the medical information, I know one of the issues around HIPAA is the talk about role-based access to records. For example, the physician, of course, would have access to everything, and then after that, it's whatever's pertinent to each practitioner. For example, a physical therapist only having access to physical therapy records, and so on and so forth, and then the nurse care and that sort of thing. How is this going to affect things with regards to written records versus electronic records? Electronic records, you can do a role-based access based on the computer system being able to recognize who it is that's wanting the access, so therefore defining the role and then being able to bring up only those records. But how will it work with a written record where you might have a patient record at OHSU or the VA hospital whose record is, you know, 5 inches thick and has everything in there from whatever they did from, you know, 50 years ago until what they did last week?
Excellent question, Representative Crummell. I think the answer is the same. The application is different. The privacy rule addresses health information in any form, whether it be electronic, paper, or oral, or in a recorded form. And the role-based access or minimum necessary concept applies in all of those circumstances. I think with electronic records, you handle that from a technical perspective many times by assigning passwords, or sometimes there are security levels that allow you to restrict access to certain areas of electronic medical records, but you also use policies and procedures to do that. With the paper record, you rely more on policy and procedure and auditing observation to make sure that individuals, for example, somebody that might be doing just scheduling and have no need to have access to the clinic notes, would by policy be restricted except for certain circumstances to access those portions of the chart that were not directly related to the job. Then it's up to the covered entity to monitor that and take appropriate action if there's a breach of those policies. So I think that the concept applies to all of the health record. The mechanism by which you accomplish the role-based access or minimum necessary may be different. Hopefully the end result is the same.
Well, and if I might add just very briefly, too, that the regulators acknowledge that there was the potential for providers not to receive the kind of information they actually needed to treat the patient. Mm-hmm. And so they did say that the minimum necessary requirement, which is that requirement that you only disclose what is necessary for the purpose of the disclosure, doesn't apply to provider-to-provider communications for treatment purposes. So providers are talking or communicating in some manner with other providers to treat Mr. Smith. they can't, they don't have to worry so much about the minimum necessity requirement.
Thank you.
Does that help? Okay.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Let's bring up our next couple of people here. Paul Frisch and Leonard Hagen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Frisch, and in my day job, I'm the in-house lawyer for the Oregon Medical Association, but I'm here today in my capacity as vice chair of the Senate Bill 104 Committee, and want to just share with you a couple of thoughts, both concerning 2305 and 6, 7, and 8, and then I will be speaking directly about 6, 7, and 9, and I will be speaking on 8. Shortly. First, I just wanted to mention that we owe a debt of thanks to Neil Bryant, to the staff of our committee, and to the volunteer lawyers and non-lawyers who contributed literally hundreds of hours assisting us in trying to figure out this mess. We started with about 600-plus possible statutory problems. We've whittled it down, and I think we've done an excellent job of keeping things in perspective. I also want you to know that this is not the only way in which we are addressing these issues. The Oregon HIPAA Forum has been a loose collaboration of over 100 organizations throughout the state who meet every quarter in Portland and who work to collaborate on finding solutions to this HIPAA problem without causing everyone to spend great sums of money, more than they need to or have to, individually, but also to keep from fighting with one another concerning issues. The major concern that I have is, come April 14th, 2003, that the commerce in medical information may come to a halt, in part because people don't understand, and that would certainly be understandable, or people have drawn inaccurate or inappropriate conclusions concerning this very difficult issue. And what we are all working for across organizations throughout the state is trying to have that day occur when we can get through the first day and maybe the first 100 days without major glitches and problems. And I speak on behalf of all members of the committee. That has been our goal, and I think we are going to be successful. So I speak in support of 2305, 6, 7, and 9, and I will reserve till later my comments about 2308. The one last comment I'd make is I want to reemphasize the point that Senator Bryant made, and that is the sun rises on April 14th, and the requirements of the federal legislation come into play. So we are all hoping that we'll be able to get these bills through and signed and in effect by that date. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Leonard Hagen. I'm the manager of legislative affairs, for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. But today I'm here in my capacity as a member of the SB 104 Advisory Committee, and in particular a member of the Health Plan Subgroup. I do have a drawing just to pass around, if I can. I have not provided this into testimony. It's just something I scratched out before I came here, but I think it will help in kind of outlining the way HIPAA is intended to work, and I will get to that in just a minute. What I would like to do before moving to HB 20306 and giving you a summary of that bill, I would like to outline for you the way HIPAA is intended to work, and I also need to explain to you the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, because health plans are subject to that act as well as HIPAA. So with that, I'll move to my outline. If you go to page 2, there's a diagram there, the second slide, HIPAA administrative simplification. And if you look in those building blocks, you can see that administrative simplification is Title II. It's one part of HIPAA. Then you go down to privacy, and you see all these other areas, transactions, security, code sets, unique identifiers, and privacy is one of those components. I think it was mentioned before, the bill that came out. By the way, Congress failed to enact legislation on privacy, so Human Services, Department of Health Human Services, passed rule that was roughly 300 pages long, and with the preamble, I think it was close to 1,500 pages. So there was lots of material to peruse. I wanted to show you this because privacy is one component of administrative simplification. And what our charge in SB 104 was to see, and it's already been explained, how HIPAA affects us, but to really do that, we had to understand what the intent of HIPAA is and how privacy works with these other components. So at its most fundamental level, and that's the bottom slide, HIPAA is a government-mandated standards for business and business healthcare e-commerce. And you can see that transactions, payers, you can see that diagram. Once this e-commerce is initiated, we had to have privacy standards, a common set of privacy standards across the states to support this exchange of e-commerce and health information. So the HIPAA Foundation is e-commerce. The HHS, when it was drafting the rule, relied heavily upon the Uniform Health Information Act. I'll refer to that as UHIA. That's important because Oregon's insurance code, what we're required to comply with, also has its origin in UHIA. And I'm not going to go through the detail of each of these slides. It would take too long, but I wanted you to have the information available. Some key elements in HIPAA, you've heard these already, covered entities and business associates, type of information, use and disclosure, minimum necessary rule, individual rights, and administrative requirements. Now, with that, this somewhat odd-looking diagram that looks probably more like a placebo or planets. But if you look, you have these three circles, health plans, clearinghouses, and providers. If you draw a circle around those circles, you have the covered entities. Those are the three covered entities. And under HIPAA, covered entities can, it facilitates the exchange of health information among those entities. And in HIPAA, that's called consent or treatment, payment, and operations. So if a health plan is exchanging information with a clearinghouse or a provider or any among those three for treatment, payment, or operations, you can do so without getting an authorization. It facilitates that necessary exchange of information. Then if you go beyond that, you'll see the dotted line goes around BA, which is business associate. HIPAA recognizes that covered entities don't do everything by themselves, that quite often they will contract with another party to provide services for that party, and those are business associates. The privacy requirements, once you contract with a business associate, goes around that business associate or that entity. So the protections go beyond just covered entities. Then there are some other permitted disclosures that I won't go into now, but that are allowed under HIPAA. And I've drawn another circle around that. Once you get outside of that, of those permitted disclosures or treatment payment operations, you can see that authorizations pretty much apply to anything else. And that's a very basic but fundamental diagram of how HIPAA works. The covered entities, you have health plans, healthcare clearinghouses, and healthcare providers. Type of information, you have health information that is shown here. I'm not going to go through all of the details of how each piece of information is defined in HIPAA, but you have it here for reference. HIPAA looks at health information. It then has a subset called individually identifiable health information called IIHI, and it's a subset of the broad definition of health information. And then you have protected health information and also summary health information. Again, I'm not going to go into the details here. I want you to know those are the definitions under HIPAA. HIPAA for use and disclosure creates somewhat of a new framework, new to what we've had in Oregon. It talks about consent, which I mentioned is treatment payment operations, or TPO, the day-to-day routine exchange of information that we all need to conduct our business. then you have authorizations which go beyond that, and that's where you need your authorization from the member or from the patient. Minimum necessary was briefly talked about already, and that's where when you are making a disclosure or using information in certain circumstances, you have to only use or disclose the minimum amount necessary to perform that task or function. Then there are individual rights under HIPAA. The privacy notice has been noted as a cornerstone, access to records, amendment of records, disclosure, accounting, the accounting of disclosures, restrictions on uses and disclosures, and confidential communications. HIPAA administrative requirements, there's quite a list. A covered entity must designate a privacy official, adopt privacy policies and procedures, train the workforce, adopt a process to handle PHI-related complaints, and you can go on down the list. The point is there are these administrative requirements under HIPAA. So that's a general synopsis of HIPAA, and now I will run you through even a more general synopsis or summary of the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which is, I'll probably get the name wrong, but I think it's the Financial Services or Institutional Modernization Act, and I believe that was 1999. Gramm-Leach-Bliley, what it does is it permits financial information, and it deals primarily with financial information. Permits financial information disclosure to non-affiliated third parties subject to consumer notice and opt-out, and affiliates subject to consumer notice only. So again, the point here is Gramm-Leach-Bliley exists. It is a disclosure of privacy law, and it also pertains to health plans. And you can go down through and you can see how it defines financial information, who's covered. Down at the bottom of page 7, types of businesses covered by Gramm-Leach: health insurers, HMOs, managed care organizations, life, disability, workers' compensation, auto, home, other consumer and property casualty insurers. Of note, those would not be covered under HIPAA, but health insurers, HMOs, and MCOs are, as well as Gramm-Leach. Gramm-Leach also covers insurance brokers, agents, producers, and you can go on down that list. Banks. And I've included some slides so you can see how Gramm-Leach compares with HIPAA with respect to covered entities, information protection, and procedural rights. The reason I'm sharing this information with you is so you can appreciate more what's in 2306 and what we had to consider. Now to the bottom of page 9. I gave you the general framework of what we currently have as it pertains to health plans in Oregon revised statutes. The codes that we primarily looked at were chapters 743 and 746. I mentioned to you the origin of most of the privacy laws we're subject to is the UHIA, or the Uniform Health Information Act. Initially, I thought that would be helpful for us since some states, I won't say which states, but some states, including some of our neighbors, have very little to no privacy laws. We have quite a few privacy laws, which brings us closer to HIPAA, but for in terms of doing a preemption analysis and trying to figure out what would be saved, what would be preempted, made it very difficult, and we actually had to go through and do it line by line because both laws had kind of the same origin, and so it made it very difficult going through and trying to figure out what would be saved and what would be preempted. For example, on page 10, do we have in Oregon law covered entities and business associates? Well, we don't have that terminology, but we do have insurers and organizations that provide functions or insurance functions on behalf of insurers. As far as information, yes, we do define information. In fact, personal information is defined very broadly and would include the way it's defined today, both financial information and individually identifiable health information or health information. Medical record information is, in current statute, very close to the equivalent of individually identifiable health information under HIPAA. We don't have guidance or instruction on de-identified information, and we don't address summary health information. As far as use and disclosure, we do have laws covering use, we have laws covering disclosure, not use, and that's 746.665. We also have consent and authorization, but we don't use it in the same way in statute as HIPAA uses it, which also created some inconsistencies and some possible preemption issues. But our statute does have the same framework of, for some routine functions, you don't need an authorization, and for other non-routine functions or disclosures, you do need an authorization. Minimum necessary rule in ORS Chapter 746, we have something close called, we can make a disclosure if it's information reasonably necessary. Again, the terminology, the intent looks to be the same, the terminology is different. Individual rights on existing statutes, we have most of them. We don't have the accounting requirement. Administrative requirements, we have most, but we don't have the privacy officer requirement or the training, the workforce requirement. So to page 11 on the preemption issues, when I get to HB 2306 in just a few minutes, you'll see that we did cover some issues. Primarily, again, in going through line by line, there were certain fundamental elements of HIPAA where we were very close in Oregon statute, but you could almost argue that in some cases in the same statute, and take, for example, a notice or an authorization, there were some pieces that might be more stringent and would be saved. There were other pieces of the very same subsection that were less stringent and would be preempted. And I'll tell you how we've decided to handle that in 2306. Some objectives of our subgroup. First of all, was to identify the preemption issues. We wanted to maintain consistency. We want to make Oregon law more consistent with HIPAA, but preserve those restrictions that are more restrictive than HIPAA. We also want to preserve disclosures allowed under HIPAA without authorization, unless specifically prohibited under existing Oregon law. The two are very close. We want to correct terminology to make it more consistent. And with health plans in mind, we also wanted to create flexibility because of the various laws we have to comply with, HIPAA and Gramm-Leach. So we want the law to be flexible enough that a health plan would be able to comply with HIPAA, Gramm-Leach, and ORS, either separately or on a combined basis, with some guidance as to, for example, without three separate notices, allow a health plan to have one notice, but that notice, the requirements, would comply with all of the laws that we have to meet. And we did not want to impose HIPAA requirements on licensees not otherwise subject to HIPAA. And that was a fine line to walk because of Gramm-Leach, which pertains to a very broad class of licensees, and then HIPAA, which pertains to a more narrow class. Okay, HB 2306.
Do we want to wait on that one until we actually have moved into HB 2306? You've signed up for that bill as well, have you not?
Actually, yes, and that's the one that I'm prepared to talk about.
Okay, and I want to wrap up on 2305 before we do on 2306. So, because I've got some people signed up on 2305 who still want to comment on that. So if you could resume a holding position. Before you go, I want to see if there are general questions for this panel. Okay, thank you. And given the nature of the bill, if there's any committee member who wants to take their cyanide capsule now, council will provide them. Next, Jane Myers. Jane, are you here? Okay. And we're just going to talk about 2305. And if you've got comments on the other ones, I'll make you come up under that one.
Mr. Chair,
we have a hard enough time tracking generally, so if we can just... My 9-year-old daughter is here in the Capitol today, Jane, and she's watching us on TV. So, and this is a message to all of you. Pretend like you're trying to explain that to her, and you'll get about half of this committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Sherrill.
Actually, being late for the committee, I was in my office next to yours before I came down, and I want to tell you your daughter is not watching this.
We'll have to have a talk with her. Go ahead, Jane.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jane Myers representing the Oregon Dental Association. Generally, we're supportive of trying to make this work with the federal HIPAA laws. The thing I wanted to point out, and this may just be an oversight, need a little advice on it, is the bill excludes the dental-only health benefit plans on page 3, line 4, from the definition of health insurer. And that's because ORS 743-730, which is referred to there, it actually has two sections. Number 18 is a definition of health benefit plans, and section B is an exclusion from the health benefit plans. It has a whole long list, one of which is dental-only plans. Dental insurance is generally sold as dental-only. So it would tend to, we think, mess up the permission that's granted on page 4, lines 13 to 26, where the covered entity, which doesn't include the dental-only plans, you have to have a relationship between, like, the dentist provider and the dental-only plan in order to make the disclosures without authorization that are permitted there. So it may just be a technical glitch, but we want to point it out to you before it goes any farther. And the other thing is I think it's getting clearer to me and to advise the members is the authorization to use and disclose protected health information form that's in the bill. We wanted to know if that's a permissive format. It sounds like this includes the kinds of disclosure sign-offs we have to get from patients for, like, HIV, AIDS information and other things. So it seems like this is a form I would have to tell our members you should use this one if you want to comply with all state laws that come into play here.
Jane, when you said the word permissive format, about 11 heads behind you went like this.
Okay, good.
So if that helps give you some clarification, yeah. I'm happy to pass that on.
Because we want to make sure we are in compliance so that we can not have a state claim against somebody who doesn't dot every I.
And let me use this as the opportunity, because I indicated to Holly Robinson that I would make this announcement. There will be a meeting to address HIPAA questions and concerns on Thursday, February 20th, from 3:30 to 5 p.m. in the Legislative Council Library. So I think this is sort of the follow-up meeting to this series of hearings where everybody can come down and sort of talk a little bit more in a group format about the issues that are raised here. So I'd encourage you to attend that meeting, Jane, and raise your issues about the dental health plan issue and see if that can get resolved and satisfied there.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Myers? Okay, thanks. Next up is Richard Lane. Come on up, Richard. And Richard, you two have signed up on all of these. Am I right about that?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And if you can, you're welcome to make a couple of broad introductory comments about your concerns, and then if you could for us, just focus right now on the 2305 concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Richard Lane. I represent the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and the organization has taken a look at all bills 2305 through 2309 and has opposition to each of the bills in varying degrees and to certain different specifics. I want to take the committee back just for a moment to this discussion about Senate Bill 104. That was a bill that established a committee to go out and look at inconsistencies between state law and the federal HIPAA law. That's what its charge was: to analyze the impact of federal laws, including but not limited to the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1998, on inconsistent or conflicting state laws, and recommend changes to state laws to ensure compliance with federal laws. I heard one of the proponents of 2305 mention that they considered at some point adoption of the HIPAA rule in its entirety. And I would submit, going through all of these bills, that what the committee ended up doing is trying to pick and choose portions of the federal rule and codify them as state law in an effort to get rid of the inconsistencies in state law. And I think we ended up in a situation that's even worse, that we have inconsistencies now with the federal law. And I'll sort of highlight for the committee certain ones that I see in 2305 and discuss 23 and 6 and 7, right, as we get to them.
Right.
The United States Health and Human Resources published the proposed privacy regulations on November 3rd of 1999. They received 52,000 comments on the proposed rule, evaluated them, and issued some modifications. On March 27th of 2002, the department again modified the proposed rule, and in a shortened 30-day comment period, received 11,400 comments. The final HIPAA rule is based upon all of that input and all of the stakeholders in this issue. I think that the HIPAA regulations, whether you like them or not, and I agree with the proponents, this is a burdensome and it's a costly proposition. But the stakeholders came up with what is codified now at 45 CFR parts 160 to 164. And that regulation states that any standard, requirement, or implementation specification adopted under this subchapter that is contrary to a provision of state law preempts the state law. A federal disclosure rule will not prevent state law, preempt state law, if the provision of state law relates to the privacy of individually identifiable health information and is more stringent than a standard requirement or implementation specification adopted under the federal rule. So, in layman's terms, I guess we've got a house now of privacy protections, and the floor has been set by the federal government. HIPAA controls where you cannot drop below, and any disclosure or use of protected information below that first floor is preempted. Any conflicting state law is no more. The federal rule controls. It brings privacy protection at least to that point. Now, state laws that might provide additional or a second floor in that house, they can coexist with the federal law because the federal law recognizes that certain additional privacy protections on a state level is a good thing. We've got to set a floor. You can't go below the floor, but you can go above the floor. So then turning to the bill itself, I did not participate in any of the committee's work during the interim as a result of the Senate 104 hearing. I was not invited to attend. But going through what is the product 2305, I analyzed it, comparing it directly with the HIPAA regulations, the floor that we have to live with in the state of Oregon. And looking at the definitions, right off the bat, covered entities, which is a linchpin to analyzing any of the HIPAA regulations, does not include a health care clearinghouse, which is defined under the federal rule. Mr. Frisch gave you this sort of, and I agree with it, you've got three parts that are covered entities: health plans, clearinghouses, and providers. And HB 2305 does not include clearinghouses, a part of the federal rule. Healthcare operations is controlled by the federal definition. Healthcare providers, again, defined under the federal rule. Health information, what we're specifically talking about, is defined by the federal regulation. And that definition is set out in 45 CFR 160.103. And if you compare that with the definition adopted proposed in 2305, you find that it does not include all of the protected information as protected by HIPAA. The broader rule encompassing more protection is going to control. The less or narrow construction adopted in 2305 is going to be preempted. We turn to the definition of individually identifiable health information under the bill. Again, it refers to the covered entities, more entities than are defined in 2305. It also defines individually identifiable health information to mean information that is a subset of health information, including demographic information, collected from an individual and is created or received by a health care provider, health plan, employer, or health care clearinghouse. The definition inside of 2305 is narrower than the definition under federal rule. Federal rule defines payment. Federal rule defines psychotherapy notes, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in one of the later bills because I think it's a more appropriate time. Just note that it's defined by the federal rules. The Section 3 of 2305, that is has been proposed as the disclosure and use section. But the disclosures and uses of any protected information are mandated by CFR 165-508. And it requires that covered entities, again, with or without an authorization, because there are certain uses of protected health information that you don't need an authorization. So you get two sets of protected information moving around. But the scope of the rule is narrowed in HB 2305. Specifically, there's no distinction between psychotherapy notes in the proposed bill. There's no reference in the core authorization elements as to certain information that the requester can provide in order to obtain the protected health information, the individual's right of access. The House Bill 2305 does not reflect the federal revocation language that is set out in the federal regulation. House Bill 2305, there's an option on the federal rule to provide certain notices as to the use and disclosure of protected information. 2305 doesn't include any of the notice requirements that are mandated by federal rule. Turning to Section 4, it refers to the cost of copying, and I know the Chair is familiar with that issue from bills that have come before his committee before. The cost provision in 2305, Section 4, does not conform to the cost provision that is imposed under the federal HIPAA statute in 164.524. Then we get to the Humphrey situation that has been discussed already. Oregon recognizes that a physician owes a duty of confidentiality to its patient and is liable for a breach of that. And with this discussions that if you comply with these rules, that should prevent you from maintaining a Humphrey's situation. Well, Oregon law has already had statutory requirements for years on a physician's duty of confidentiality, and Humphrey's was decided when those existing laws were in effect. So this adoption, whether it's the federal HIPAA standard or some modified standard, should not change the underlying foundation for Humphrey's. Moreover, there are certain situations where perhaps the provider follows the procedures but knows it's not right. That's what was involved in Humphrey's. The physician knew that the individual who was seeking the protected information wasn't entitled to it. And that's why there was a right of action recognized. HIPAA shouldn't change that. Now, Senator Bryan, I think, mentioned that there is civil and criminal penalties involved in a violation of HIPAA, and that is correct. But there's no reason why the protections afforded under Humphrey's are anywhere preempted by the HIPAA regulations. Now, what's also striking to me is what is omitted from House Bill 2305. Under federal rules now, 45 CFR 164.520, there are certain notice provisions that have to be given to every individual by the covered entity regarding the use and disclosure of protected health information. And the regs go on, you know, quite extensively regarding what required elements need to be there. It requires examples to be given to the individual regarding the use of disclosure. 45 CFR 164.522 provides for a right to request privacy protection for protected health information. You can tell somebody that despite the rules, you would like something protected. The physician or provider may not be obligated to, but that right has to be provided to the individual. 45 CFR 164-525 provides for access of individuals to protected health information. And if a provider knows where that information is, he must provide that information to the person requesting the access. 45 CFR 164-526 provides for amendment of protected health information. You get a right to say you don't want something in there. The doctor can refuse or the provider can refuse to put it, but your objection and your disagreement with that denial must be made part of the record and disclosed to any other covered entity. You're entitled to accounting of the disclosures under federal law. When we get to 2306, you'll note that in that particular bill, some of those rights are recognized. But when you look at 2305, they are omitted. And the problem has to do with how it was defined under each of those bills and the effect that it was going to have on various groups. And under HIPAA, all of those groups are defined inside of the covered entities. And if the committee is concerned about any inconsistencies with state law, then I think that the appropriate thing might have been what apparently was considered at one time by the Senate 104 committee, and that's full-scale adoption of HIPAA with all of its warts as state law. I'll reserve on 2306, and as we go forward, I've got some other comments.
I'd appreciate it. Otherwise, we're going to get them all muddled together. And
I'll try to keep it straight.
And not be able to track.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Richard. Are there questions for Mr. Lane? Yes, Representative Przanski.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if all of the different people who are giving us testimony on these particular bills that really are going to get down to some nitty-gritty points, if you could actually document it for us as to the points of contention so we know exactly where we may need to be focusing our thoughts.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Przanski, I took a humble step at trying in my written submissions to highlight either a definition in 2305 that failed to comply with federal law and set out the federal law. There are certain references in my my testimony that referred to definitions with their citation to the CFR, and either I or counsel would gladly provide the committee or members with the actual definitional sections of the CFR regulations so that the committee could compare a CFR definition with the proposed definition in 2305. I hope that answers your question.
Okay. Anything else? I'm going to, Senator Bryan has indicated he has to leave, so I'm going to give him an opportunity to come up and make a couple of comments, and I'm going to ask Ms. Dayton to come up. I want to ask her also, can someone identify for me where the Dash 1 amendment to 2305 came from?
That came from us.
That's okay. And that is the one that, because have you seen the Dash 1?
Mr. Chairman, I have not seen any amendments to 2305.
Okay, Mr. Lane, if we'll get you a copy of the Dash 1, because I did note that when you mentioned the issue on clearinghouse, it is include. I think the Dash 1s do include clearinghouse, so at least that issue may have been addressed. I can't speak to any of the other issues you've raised, whether or not they're addressed to the Dash 1 or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Senator Bryant, there's nothing worse than really complicated, boring bills that everybody agrees on, except really complicated, boring bills that appears are contentious.
I understand. And first of all, I think all the amendments that are here today come from the committee, from our review of the bill on January 30th.
Thank you.
I wanted to state for the record that the form that's included is intended to be permissive. I always find it helpful as a practicing attorney if you have a form that is suggested to be used, it's helpful, but it is permissive. Concerning an issue of our work group and being there being invitations, let me assure you that all these meetings were public. They were posted on the department's website. We sent out invitations to different groups that we thought would have an interest, including different sections of the Oregon State Bar. The Oregon State Bar attended these meetings. So I was surprised, in fact, that the trial lawyers weren't there. But it was open, and the invitation was certainly extended to anyone who had an interest in this, especially the bar groups. And, in fact, one of those groups was the procedures and practice section of the bar, and they responded to us that at this point they didn't want to see, didn't have any specific suggestions. And for those who are attorneys on the committee know that that's a committee where you try to balance the plaintiffs and the defense counsel, and So, and as I said, Susan Graby was usually at our meetings. I did receive a letter dated today, Mr. Chair, from the chairs of the Procedure and Practice section, and they wanted one clarification in House Bill 2305 and 2307, and this is directed to you. I'm not sure you've seen it. But in particular, they were concerned that where those bills talk about disclosures consistent with state and federal law, that in fact a court order dictating disclosure will constitute a declaration sufficient to meet those requirements, and that's true. To me, that would be consistent with state laws, which allows for that type of order to be issued. But, Mr. Chair, as you consider this, it'd probably be helpful if a member of the committee, when you decide to make decisions about this, also would state that so that we don't run into the problem we did in 1995 on trying to adopt the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure when a very competent staff person said, this is our intent, and the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court said, well, that's not good enough. Who's he? He's just a staff person.
Yeah. I seem to recall that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Gwen, do you want to come up just for a minute?
For the record, again, I'm Gwen Dayton.
I guess I'm interested just generally, and we're going to be able to do this on each of these issues, and we're going to obviously run out of time, I suspect, today, and we'll keep doing this. Obviously, we've got a deadline, so we'll try to put this on. I think we've got a couple. We may have a day next week that's open on the calendar that we can schedule the balance of the discussion, recognizing the time constraints on this. But do you have any initial thoughts with respect to the issues raised by Mr. Lane, or do you want to reserve and come back and talk to us at another time?
Well, I can offer some comments, and I will try to be brief. First, I think as you've already indicated, some of the technical difficulties with the definitions are addressed in the amendment, the Dash 1 amendments. And I think Dr. Markham actually has an additional fix to the definition of healthcare provider that he and I have discussed, and I think it's a good one, and I think we'll implement that. With regard to the broader issue that was raised by Mr. Lang about the number of issues or protections that are in HIPAA but are not in state law, for example, HIPAA provides that you must, a provider must give a notice of privacy practices to a patient at the first date of service, explaining what, for example, the hospital will do with your information. There are a number of patient rights contained in HIPAA, right to access, right to amendment, right to accounting. They are not in 2305. The reason they're not in 2305 is not because we do not value them as patient rights and as important public policy, but rather because we made the very deliberate decision not to rewrite HIPAA into state law, because HIPAA is the law of the land, regardless of whether we put it in state law or not, in the same way that we have additional protection of drug alcohol records on the federal level than we have in the state. And the federal law exists regardless of whether it's also included in state law. And so all those protections are law in Oregon, regardless of whether we include them in 2305.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Shetterly.
Thank you. Yeah, just as one who has tried to remain ignorant of HIPAA as long as I...
It's over now.
It's over now.
Yeah. I guess my only request is that when we're done with this, again, as a practitioner, I can have confidence that when I refer to the ORS, I am not being led into some conduct that's either prohibited or being misdirected away from conduct that is required by federal law. So I agree we don't want to restate the entire federal law in the Oregon statutes, but it sounds like there are concerns as to whether there are permissible divergences in this, and that's what I want from from the work group, so that at least I know that whatever I see in statute is going to track with whatever I have to do in federal law.
Right.
And then if I have to go to the CFR to get the rest of the story, that's fine. I just don't want to have to be looking for inconsistencies between Oregon and the CFR.
Well, yeah, Chair Williams, Representative Shetterly, that's exactly our goal. And in fact, it's not in the jurisdiction of this committee, but there are changes to the rules of civil procedure, Oregon rules of civil procedure, that are not necessarily mandated, proposed.
Actually,
are they here?
They're okay. For the council.
Well, right.
But I won't.
get into don't limit our jurisdiction of the committee, Ms.
You're right. It was not my decision to make.
The Speaker's office is doing that enough as it is.
A better statement of Ben, not before you today. But there are proposed changes to those rules of civil procedure that are designed to make the law look like the combination of federal and state law that it now is after HIPAA, so that there would not be a trap for the unwary. Even if the rule was not preempted, there were changes made to try to make it appear as the law really is. So that was our goal, too. We didn't want to have anything remain in state law that if you complied with it, you'd be out of compliance with HIPAA.
Okay. All right. Well, this is, as you can tell, committee, going to be a thorny subject, and we're going to keep moving through the agenda as much as we can today. But obviously, we're not going to be passing any of these bills out right away. But we are going to have to act relatively soon if we're going to meet that April 15th deadline. So this is going to need to be something that all of us get comfortable with and come to some consensus on how we want to move it through the process pretty quickly. I'm next going to, we're going to go right into, and I've already got a public hearing open, so we'll continue the public hearing now on House Bill 2306. Before I close the House, the hearing on 2305, is there anyone else who wanted to testify on 2305? Then, hearing none, we'll close the public hearing on 2305. 2306 is open, and I'm going to ask Paul Frisch and Leonard Hagen to come back up to the dais to talk about 2306. And I'll make that double reminder again about my 9-year-old daughter. And if you can spoon feed us, we'd appreciate it.
I'm going to defer my comments and let Leonard, given the time, let Leonard present for you.
Okay.
Okay.
While he is doing that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, at approximately 3 o'clock we're supposed to convene an audit group to learn about HIPAA. I think spoon-feeding will be the order of that day. At a few minutes before that, I will have to retire and set up a projector and computer for that, so I didn't want anyone to think that I had left for any bad reason. Certainly a good one. Thank you.
Okay. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm glad you mentioned your 9-year-old daughter. Then hopefully she will appreciate
it. Yeah, I'm going to have her color it afterwards.
She can color it. Since I already gave you a background on HIPAA and GLBA, I'm going to move directly to the bill. And in summary of 2306, moving first to the definitions in Section 6, The point I'd like to make here is, you'll notice that, remember I was talking about some of the definitions in HIPAA, identifiable health information, protected health information, and that in Oregon statute we had similar definitions, close but not quite. We had medical record information. You'll see that's been deleted, and in the definitions that's an attempt to make it more consistent with HIPAA. So we now use identifiable health information, protected health information, and because this statute also addresses Gramm-Leach-Bliley, both for health plans and other licensees in Oregon statute, which could be banks, agents, life, disability insurers, etc. We've also incorporated financial information and a definition of personal financial information, and that's in 22. So I just want to point out that an attempt was made to make the statute consistent as far as terminology goes. In Section 2, and really Sections 2 through 6 are the core elements or the core pieces of the bill. In Section 2, here we've listed the key privacy elements, and I mentioned those earlier in my remarks, that we talk about use and disclosure, access, notice of privacy practices, amendment, and accounting. And these are standards for health insurers that are subject to the information privacy provisions under both HIPAA and GLBA. Under Section 3, in Sections 1 to 3, those are disclosures that a health plan or health insurer can make both with and without an authorization. Again, the intent was to reflect HIPAA, without rewriting HIPAA in the statute, and you can tell that because we don't have 300 pages here, but we tried to capture the core elements for use and disclosure in Sections 1 to 3. Section 4 pertains to personal financial information. So there you have the uses, or not the uses, but the disclosures for personal financial information. And then in Sections 5, 6, or I'm saying sections, I'm sorry, I'm confusing you. This is all under Section 3, and it's subsections 1 to 3 are the HIPAA components. Subsection 4 is Gramm-Leach, and then subsections 5 and 6 talk about charges that may be charged for records, as well as the adequate notice and uses of disclosures of personal information. So that's all in subsection. It's all in Section 3, subsections 1 through 6. I went over definitions in Section 6, and then the remainder of the bill is really clean up again to make it consistent with HIPAA and Gramm-Leach. There are some additional comments that I was going to make regarding some technical changes, but I think most of them have been addressed, and I will reserve those in addition for the work group.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions about 2306 with this panel? Okay, thank you. Richard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, reflecting on perhaps Representative Shetterly's comments a moment ago, I think there's going to be an opportunity to confer with some of the proponents of the bill regarding these definitional objections that I may have to 2306 and the lack of conformity with the federal law. You have my written observations. I just looked at the dash one, an amendment to include a clearinghouse inside of a covered entity. That takes care of a potential problem. Looking at 2306, though, if you look at page one, line nine, it refers to health insurers only, and then documents all of the rights under HIPAA. Those rights are more extensive than owed by a health insurer. They have to cover all of the covered entities, clearinghouses, health providers, health insurers. And if we're going to tell somebody looking at the ORSs that those duties are owed by health insurance, we owe them an obligation to tell them they're owed by more than just health insurers.
And, Richard, did you see the dash ones on 2306 as well?
My apologies, Mr. Chairman.
It's not your fault. We're getting some of this fresh as well. So, and again, I don't know whether or not I know that I see the word health care clearinghouse in those. So that may address some of your issue, but again, I can't tell, and you're going to have to review them to know if that addresses more of your issue.
And Mr. Chairman, on page four, I don't know if you're looking at something that reflects subsection nine, covered entity, again omits, you know, the clearinghouse language that we've talked about. I don't know if that dash one reflects an amendment there as well. But there are number of other observations I can make, much like my testimony on 2305, that what you have here is an attempt to cobble certain portions of HIPAA into state law. Sometimes the cobbling omits critical language from HIPAA. Sometimes the definitions in HIPAA are not completely embraced inside of the proposed bills. And I think it's technical, it's very dry technical type of work that the work committee may have to take a look at. But I think I would like to take a look at the dash ones that have now been submitted on 2306 and reserve comments that I may have, that if we can get all of the rights, protections, obligations, and duties that are owed under HIPAA and codified in 2305 and 306, I think then everybody will be satisfied with the ultimate product. I'm just looking here to other observations in 2306. I return to an observation I made on 2305, for example, on health information. It's defined inside of 2306. Again, the health information, that definition under HIPAA, states any records created or received by a health care provider, health plan, public health care authority, employer, life insurer, school or university, or health care clearinghouse. And that's federal law. If you look at the health information definition inside of 2306, it fails to include all of the entities that are identified in federal law that may create protected health information. And I would hope that the proponents can see their way through to incorporating the HIPAA definitions when they're used in the state statute.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly.
Well, again, I just, again, the similar reflection as in 2308, and I think the challenge for us, and probably for a lot of practitioners, is that it's one thing to look at the bill and say, well, that makes sense because it looked, I mean, and to see no problem with the bill. But the problem is, unless you're a HIPAA expert who knows what's in federal law, you're not going to know if any of this is, if there are gaps between any of this and what's in federal law. I know enough about HIPAA to know that it's almost incomprehensible, and the prospect of this committee having to wade through that.
We could get a vote on that, I think, today.
Yeah. Well, that's the real fright, though, because I can look at these bills and say, well, this all makes sense, I can do this, but what I don't know is what else is there out there in federal law.
Well, you don't know.
Yeah, well, that's right.
You don't know what you don't know. Right.
But,
right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shetterly, that's my concern, that by enacting an inaccurate reflection of HIPAA law, that we are opening up to a series of attacks, that there is an inconsistency created by these bills. And that's, I guess, the essence of my testimony on all of these bills, is that if you do not accurately reflect the HIPAA disclosure and use mandates, then you've got a problem.
Okay. Anything else for Mr. Lane? All right. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to... Anybody else on 2306? Want to come back up? Yeah. Mr. Hagan again, briefly.
And if the lawyers are having a hard time with this, think of how the healthcare providers feel.
Yeah. Very brief comments on 2306. Part of the reason it may seem incomplete when looking at 2306 with HIPAA is HIPAA addresses, first of all, 2306 changes the insurance code in the state. So under the URS, it's dealing with the insurance code. HIPAA deals with self-insured employers, providers, and health plans. And 2306 is not intended to address HIPAA for all of those various categories of providers. It's intended to address health plans.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Barker, do you need a couple of Tylenol?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2306, and we're going to proceed with a hearing on House Bill 2307. And I'm going to ask Gwen Dayton to come forward, and Scott, do you want to come up too? We'll try to save a little time. And begin when you're ready, Gwen.
Thank you. Again, I'm Gwen Dayton, counsel for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, but also a member of the advisory committee that was behind these bills. I'm pinch hitting today, so I apologize. I don't have any written testimony, and we'll just let you know what I know about 2307. I'm also co-presenting with Paul Frisch before the budget committee at 3, so if I leave, it's not out of a lack of interest. 2307 looks at ORS 179-505. 179-505 is the parallel statute to 192-525 that we discussed earlier. 179-505 is the essentially the core confidentiality statute for public records dealing with mental health, developmental disabilities, corrections, those sorts of public health functions. There were two purposes in amending 179-505. And the other statutes amended in here, by the way, are primarily housekeeping amendments, and so that's why my focus is on 179-505. There were two problems. First, 179-505 is preempted in some circumstances and confusing in others in a way that 192-525 was. Uses inconsistent terms with HIPAA and would be difficult. As Representative Shetterly indicated, he doesn't want traps for the unwary. We felt 179-505, unless amended, would present some of those traps, and we just wanted to incorporate HIPAA terminology, HIPAA language into the statute, and that's what the vast majority of this statute is, or certainly what it's intended to be. The other issue is one not particularly a HIPAA question, but rather a issue of confusion that we took the opportunity to remedy. The definition of provider in 179-505 was amended last session to remove a reference to a private provider that has a contract with what was the Mental Health Division, and the Department of Human Services was inserted because of the reorganization that went on with the department. Problem with that is it reads, according to many, that a private entity like a hospital that has any kind of a contract with the Department of Human Services, like a Medicaid contract, as they all do, is subject to this statute. That was not, I believe, the intention, but that is the interpretation of some, and that any record held by that private institution, be it a public record, a record of a public patient, whether or not it's a public record, would be subject to this statute. So it was just confusing about the scope of the statute. And this statute imposes greater restriction on release of records as is appropriate because it deals with protected records like mental health records and others. And so the ramifications of imposing the standards that are in 179-505 to private providers broadly that aren't necessarily treating the patients that are anticipated in this statute were significant. So I was part of the subcommittee that redrafted this, and the point of the redrafting of the definition of provider is to clarify that we're talking about public provider, public institutions, or private providers that have a contract to provide those public functions on behalf of the state. So that's the point of that. And then the rest of it, as I indicated, is largely taking out the use of the term consent and putting in authorization, because that's the term that HIPAA uses, using the term individual instead of patient, that kind of thing. Nothing that is intended to be very dramatic. And, in fact, one of the first iterations of these amendments did go further to try to look at what this statute maybe should be doing and making some of those broad policy decisions. And we ratcheted back and did not, because we view the purpose of this committee or the advisory committee and these bills not to try to adopt new Oregon policy in the area of health care confidentiality, but rather to make it consistent with HIPAA and make it clear to providers and practitioners. And so that was what we tried to do. We did call out, I will bring to your attention on page 5, psychotherapy notes. Psychotherapy notes are specially protected under HIPAA. They're a very narrow subset of mental health records. They're by no means all mental health records. And before a provider may release them, he or she generally must get an authorization, except in very defined circumstances. And so to avoid confusion, when you say mental health records, you are picking up psychotherapy notes because they're essentially a subset. We just drew them out and made it real clear what you're supposed to do with psychotherapy notes. With that, it's kind of a whirlwind tour, but...
Wayne, can you address the dash one and the dash two amendments? Are they both from the work group or the HIPAA committee?
Could be.
Are the dash two's yours? Okay, so the dash twos are from DHS.
Okay.
How about the dash ones? Anybody claiming the dash ones? It deletes the word immediate and inserts the word timely.
I believe those are ours. As you can tell, I am pinching
those are yours.
But I believe those are ours, yeah.
But the dash twos are DHS, right? All right, we're going to allow Dr. Kitchen an opportunity to talk about those. Any questions for Gwen before we move on for Scott? Mr. Taylor.
Chair Williams, members of the Judiciary Committee, I'm Scott Taylor, Oregon Department of Corrections, and I am the least qualified person on HIPAA to be speaking to you today. I have with me my medical director from the Department of Corrections, Joe Richter. We basically believe in the revision of the current statute you see before you with House Bill 2307. We think there's important and necessary, and it gives us a common standard for both state and federal law around the disclosure and access to inmate medical and mental health records maintained by the Department of Corrections. Sometimes we forget the size of the medical operation and mental health operation run by the Department of Corrections. These bills allow us, we believe, to move forward with those. I will say that we have talked to Dr. Kitchen, and when she proposes those amendments, those work for us also.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Taylor from the Department of Corrections? Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I kind of feel like a man out on a limb with a saw in his hand, blindfolded, not sure what side to start cutting on.
So how do you vote?
When we get into discussions of this type. But I did have a question on 2307, and it's on page 5, and it would be sub 17A, except as provided in paragraph B of this section. A health care service provider must obtain authorization from an individual or an individual's legal guardian to disclose psychotherapy notes. And my question, Mr. Chairman and members, was what about if it's necessary to protect the public safety? Is that any way pertinent to this?
Chair Williams, Representative Jensen, HIPAA does provide a restriction on access to records if release of those records might be, I'm not going to get the words exactly right, but I think it's injurious or harmful, certainly to the patient. Is your concern that a healthcare services provider might release psychotherapy notes without an authorization?
Well,
in a manner that's
no.
My
concern is that if there is something in the patient's the psychotherapist's notes relating to the patient that might have to do with or that might present a public safety issue.
You're the opposite of what I was thinking. You're thinking perhaps the provider needs to be able to release the information to avert a serious threat.
That's right.
Okay.
That was the bill we dealt with last session, as I recall. Do you recall that, Representative Shatterly?
I think so.
There was a bill, I think, in last session that we spent a considerable amount of time on.
There is a very express HIPAA provision that allows the release of protected health information as necessary to avert a serious threat to health or safety.
Okay. So that HIPAA regulation plus whatever we have in statute would cover my concerns?
I think so. And Representative Jensen, I'll ask Ms. Romaine to actually track down, working with the committee counsel, the bill that we also dealt with last session, specifically where we had a number of the folks who provide those mental health services in discussions also, I believe, with the district attorneys and others about the release of that information. And I admit after 5 special sessions, it's become a bit foggy as to what we did do. But I can remember talking a lot about it. Okay. Thank you both. Dr. Kitchen from DHS, if you'd come forward, please. Could someone help Dr. Kitchen come forward? Yeah. And, Doctor, because you and I have talked privately, I won't make you explain to the committee what you did here, but it's a great story if anyone wants to ask her off the when we're not on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Tina Kitchen. I am the medical director for the Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities. And it's taken me a couple of years to memorize that. So I would like to propose that you strongly consider the Dash 2 amendments, which actually we're the people who are proposing them. We do not have troubles with the proposed changes due to HIPAA to the section of the statute, but actually with the current statute, the way it's written, in that it only recognizes guardians as alternative medical decision makers, i.e. people who can release protected information. And these proposed statutes would allow DHS and its county partners to recognize other legally authorized substitute medical decision makers, especially healthcare representatives. And what I've actually done is just proposed stealing some of the language from House Bill 2305 and inserting it into here and substituting those words every time you see the words legal guardian or guardian. However, the one section that I feel least comfortable about, considering I know nothing about estate law, is in Section 3 of 2307, which discusses the standing in a court. And the way we have left it is that the guardian only has the standing in the court, not the expanded definition of who is allowed to make those decisions.
Let me pause you there for a moment, if I could, Doctor. Did you follow that, Representative Shatterly?
No, I did not.
Would you say that again?
The last little piece?
Yeah, the last little piece, the part that you said you were least comfortable with.
Okay. Section 3 on page 5 or 6 deals with who has standing in court. And the proposed amendments leave it as guardian or the person. It does not use the expanded definition that would include a healthcare representative or a personal representative in a state law. And I am least comfortable with that. But
Mr. Chair, I sure don't know. But if we're defining representative capacities, those are two that are likely to come up.
I think the question was whether or not it ought to be extended beyond to personal representatives or others in that particular situation.
But, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding under HIPAA that the privacy rights don't die with the person. So to that extent, in fact, I've noticed that funeral service providers, for instance, are covered as health care providers, even under House Bill 2305. So I think it's probable that you're going to have a carryover into what personal representatives do in estates. I'm just guessing, because I know those privacy rights survive the patient.
Yeah, and that was the issue that I was and that Dr. Kitchen and I had a brief conversation about. I guess what I'd ask, since we're not going to go to work session on this today, perhaps you could swing by and actually chat with Representative Shetterly about that issue, and you could maybe take a closer look at it, Representative, and give us your sense. But I wanted to make sure that if we were going to broaden that definition, that we were doing it in the right places for all of the respective situations. Any other questions for Dr. Kitchen? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to the issue of guardian or healthcare representative, how would this relate to a person that has a power of attorney for healthcare for an individual? Say a person that has a POA for their parent or some other relative, spouse, so on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, my understanding is that a power of attorney for health care has been amended and folded into ORS 127, which is now called a health care representative, so that you actually appoint you appoint that other person to be your decision maker if you're not capable. And what used to be called power of attorney for healthcare is now called a healthcare representative.
That's all right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Mr. Lane, do you want to come up and comment on 2307?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I will be brief. There are four observations I would make about 2307. This is the first time that we've sat down and we've discussed psychotherapy records. Psychotherapy records are treated, are distinguished under HIPAA. HIPAA, as I've been trying to explain to you, covers far and away more covered entities than 2307 defines. And I would refer the committee to page 2, line 10, where it says what information is being protected. It's limited to healthcare service provider. HIPAA is not so limited. When you look at the definition of disclosure on page 2, line 2, it does not conform with 45 CFR 164501, which defines disclosure. The definition of psychotherapy that's presented in 2307 on page 2, lines 18 to 23, does not conform with 45 CFR 164.501 or the exceptions regarding disclosure of psychotherapy records. Certain modalities are not protected as psychotherapy records, for example. The last thing to protect the Department of Corrections, on page 6, line 27, House Bill 2307 appears to authorize disclosure at any Department of Corrections institution. The HIPAA regulations are limited to disclosures at the correctional institution. You may be able to share psychotherapy records because there's a problem in your own facility about the health and safety of workers or other inmates. I don't believe that you can disclose it to any correctional facility, and that's for the state to actually consider.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Are there any questions for Mr. Lane, Representative Crummell?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Relative to that, then, I think it goes back to Representative Jensen's question with regards to the health and safety of the public once a person is released from a correctional institution, or the health and safety of individuals if a person were to be were to escape from a correctional institution. Any comments about that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crummell, a couple of comments. There are provisions for the protected health information when an individual leaves the correctional facility. And I don't know what those are off the top of my head, but they are set out in the HIPAA standards. I think they're somewhat restricted, and use and disclosure would probably be a violation, but I would need to check that to let you know. As far as the health and safety of the public generally, there are various proposals, and I think we'll touch on them when we look at the other bills, under HIPAA for reporting to certain governmental entities or services that are designed to protect the health and welfare of the citizens, and there's certain exceptions there. Escape, you got me. I don't know where that would end up. I imagine that there's a provision in HIPAA that that's an emergency situation, and there's probably some discussion of the use and disclosure under such a circumstance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to thank you, Mr. Lane, and everyone else. We did not get to, and I'm going to close unless there's anyone else on 2307. Is there anyone on 2307? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on 2307. Given the time, I apologize to those of you who had signed up on 2308 and 2309. We're losing committee members fast. I think it's even faster given the subject matter today. We're going to close the public hearings on 2308 and 2309. That I opened. We will seek to reschedule all of these bills, but particularly 2308 and 2309 as quickly as we can, given the committee's schedule. I want to take this opportunity again to remind you that there will be a meeting to address HIPAA questions and concerns on Thursday, February 20th from 3:30 to 5 p.m. in the Legislative Council Library. Might be a good opportunity to address some of these issues that were raised here at the hearing today, and to circle back with committee counsel and committee members to discuss them. And with that, we are adjourned for the afternoon.